This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. If you've watched any local TV, or even if you've opened YouTube, or Facebook, or Twitter, or Instagram lately, then you've probably come face to face with this.
In 2016, I warned that Donald Trump was a dangerous demagogue. When the Republican Congress wouldn't hold him accountable, I went to work helping run winning campaigns in 21 House seats. It's time for the Senate to act and remove Trump from office. And if they won't do their jobs this November, you and I will.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg has taken over America's airwaves. The former New York mayor is running for president and spending hundreds of millions of dollars on ads, tackling everything from health care to gun control to President Donald Trump. And so far, he spent $250 million, maybe more, on his 2020 campaign. And some of the other candidates, well, they're not happy about it.
Michael Bloomberg is making a bet about democracy in 2020. He doesn't need people. He only needs bags and bags of money.
Sorry, you ain't gonna buy this election.
It's time to talk Bloomberg with our monthly politics check-in with Reed Wilson, national correspondent for The Hill. Reed, welcome back.
Hey, Todd, how are you?
Great to have you as always. I'm glad you're here, and we'd love to hear from you as well. What do you think about the candidacy of Michael Bloomberg? You can comment on our Facebook page. You can tweet us at 1A. You can email us 1A@WAMU.org. Well, Reed, if we talk about Michael Bloomberg, the first thing we have to talk about is money. And lots of money. Exactly how much has he spent so far?
Well, he spent about $300 million on television advertisements. And to put that in a little bit of context, that's what President Trump spent in 2016. Not in the 2016 primary, in the entire 2016 race. And Mike Bloomberg has been in this contest for now about, what, 2.5 months. So he's spending at a colossal rate after this debacle in the Iowa caucuses. He says he's going to double that spending ahead of the Super Tuesday and the states that will come next. This is just unbelievable. I pulled some numbers the other day. In total, Bernie Sanders, the candidate who, aside from Bloomberg, who's raised the most money, say, from other people, not named Mike Bloomberg, has spent $29 million on advertising. That's a lot of money. Bloomberg has spent more than 10 times that in just 2.5 months, and Bernie Sanders has been in the race for almost a year.
And we should say all of this money, yes, TV ads blanketing the airwaves and the internet. It's incredible on the internet. Forget about algorithms. You open any video on even like kids' cartoon videos. There's Michael Bloomberg staring back at you, which is a little weird. But not just ads, staff. I mean, he's hiring an army of staffers. He's paying them ridiculous amounts of money in the Bloomberg way to make sure they're comfortable. What else?
Yeah, the staffers are north of 1,000 people already. He said the other day in California that he'll have 800 people in California alone for the Super Tuesday primary out there. That's, of course, the big delegate hall that is the most valuable prize to come on Super Tuesday. And a lot of these staffers, I mean, they're look, the life of a campaign staffer is tough. They don't make a lot of money. They live in, you know, they sleep on supporters' couches and things like that. Bloomberg's campaign is doing things a little differently. They have paid people 2 and 3 times what a similar staffer on another campaign would make. A lot of them are living in corporate housing in New York, where his campaign is based. And it appears that he's actually getting some results for all of his spending. On Sunday, the day before the Iowa caucuses, when all the candidates were stumping around Des Moines, I was there and I saw 2,000 people lining up for Pete Buttigieg. I saw about 1,000 people rallying for Michael Bloomberg, for Joe Biden in his final rally in Des Moines. And then Mike Bloomberg pulled 1,400 people in Phoenix. I mean, that's insane. That's a huge rally that would be a rallying cry for any candidate around the country or any other presidential candidate. But then he went to Philadelphia and pulled 2,000 people to an event that was only a couple of blocks from Joe Biden's campaign headquarters.
So people seem to be responding. David wrote this on our Facebook page. Mike Bloomberg should be spending his money helping to hold the House and flip the Senate, not running for president. Kevin wrote, you know what we need as president to make up for electing a self-serving New York billionaire? A different New York billionaire. And Tim wrote this on Facebook. I have no problem with Mike Bloomberg. I don't care that he's a billionaire. The proof is in the work that he's done. If he's the nominee, he has my vote, says Tim. And Reed, that makes me want to ask you, you know, if you had asked a few months ago, you'd have had a hard time finding even a handful of Democrats who were clamoring for the Mike Bloomberg candidacy. I mean, they maybe two traders down on Wall Street at some hedge fund who thought Mike Bloomberg was really cool. That was about it. Things are starting to change. How does that fit now? How does his pitch fit with Democrats now that he's starting to build what you're describing as actual visual support?
Yeah. One of the things that I took away from the last 5 days that I spent in Iowa, I talked to 50 or 60 Democrats there. Who do you like? Why do you like them? What's your most important issue? And every single one of them said, first of all, I will vote for the Democratic nominee no matter who it is, because my top priority is beating President Trump and getting him out of office. Joe Biden's campaign is all about providing the steady ship and now is not a time to take a risk. Let's go with the safe candidate who can win. Well, what is the safe candidate who can win? Is it somebody who just finished fourth in the Iowa caucuses after talking about how electable he's been and who's struggled to raise money? Or is it somebody who has a limitless checkbook, who is willing to be an ally of other Democrats? I mean, he's spent already money to defend Democratic House candidates and Senate candidates. He said that he would spend money on down ballot races. So basically, at a moment when the Democratic National Committee has had a huge problem fundraising, at the moment when people are looking at President Trump's campaign account near $200 million already, people are looking at a guy with $60 billion who's apparently willing to add some zeros to the checks and as the new safe harbor.
And you mentioned not only voters' motivations, who you spoke to through your reporting, their motivation is, look, I just want to defeat Donald Trump.
Yeah.
There's a flip side to that, which seems to be severe anxiety among Democrats. Don't mess it up. Mm-hmm. Don't make a mistake. You saw in some of the numbers in Iowa, undecided people, who's the best? All they care about, many of them, is just making sure Donald Trump isn't president anymore. And Bloomberg seems to understand that and seems to reflect some of that anxiety. Here's what he told Jimmy Fallon last week about why he entered the race so late.
Because I took a look and I thought the people who were running didn't have ideas that were practical. We couldn't afford them and Congress wouldn't pass them. And I didn't think they could beat Donald Trump. And I think the most important thing is to change who's living in the White House.
How scared are Democrats that they'll pick wrong?
Oh, man. The level of anxiety among Democratic voters in Iowa. Now, look, this is Iowa, so these people live, eat, and breathe presidential politics, right? I remember one time a couple of years ago going to the Johnson County Council on Foreign Relations, which I thought was a little aggressive for a county of 100,000 people. But I mean, these people take their politics extremely seriously. And look, I have sources in Iowa who are actually political professionals who were agonizing so much over their decision that they created a spreadsheet to evaluate the candidates. They were giving different point totals and things like that. And then on caucus night itself, I went to a caucus in Northwest Des Moines, and I ran into a bunch of people who had just decided, here they are subject to a year of campaigning, and they decide when they walk in the door because fundamentally they couldn't come to a decision over who was best to beat President Trump. Iowa voters were very conscious of the drawbacks that each candidate faced, whether or not Americans would elect a woman and how that would affect their support or lack thereof for Elizabeth Warren, whether or not Bernie Sanders was too far left, or whether his far leftness would inspire a new generation of Americans to come out, whether Joe Biden is capable of being president for 4 or 8 years, whether Pete Buttigieg has the experience necessary to run the bottom line. Everybody was thinking about drawbacks rather than the benefits that their supported candidate would have. And I think that just reflects the angst and the anxiety that Democrats hold about whether or not they can actually beat President Trump.
You can really feel the ambivalence here. Betsy wrote on Facebook, if Mike Bloomberg can beat Trump, I'm for him. In this crazy race, his money, his connections, his knowledge might be what it takes. Josh says this: Mike Bloomberg's candidacy is a disgrace. It highlights just how strongly money influences American politics. How much faith can we have in our democracy when it seems like money can buy elections? Reid, what are some of the weak points of Mike Bloomberg in front of a Democratic audience? This is not the year you would have expected, not just a billionaire, but a mega billionaire to be rising in the polls. Forget that, a former Republican mega billionaire.
Yeah, right. He's won three elections in his life, and two of those he won as Republicans, right? He won as mayor of New York City in a fairly close election where he spent more money than had ever been spent on New York mayor's race, and he only won by a couple of percentage points, of course, in a very Democratic city, but he sort of set himself apart. He's the fact that he is spending money, as I think it was Josh, was it, brought up, like, that's an issue in the Democratic primary. The notion that their votes can be bought is something that you can sure bet Bernie Sanders is going to be talking about quite a lot, or Elizabeth Warren or Pete Buttigieg or whoever is standing on a debate stage next to Mike Bloomberg. They're going to talk about the, you know, the oligarchy and the plutocracy of a billionaire trying to buy his way into the White House, more so than even President Trump, who frankly didn't spend all that much of his own money in the grand scheme of things. Of course, he spent more than, you know, you or I would have available to spend on his campaign. But Bloomberg is actually putting his money where his mouth is. That's a benefit. It's getting him these mega crowds in Philadelphia and Phoenix, but it can also be a drawback, especially in a party where they're talking about, you know, expanding voting rights and getting more people involved, and the power of the people and the power of the little guy. Well, this is basically the opposite of the little guy. And then I'd point to some specific policy issues. I mean, he has already walked back his support for stop and frisk. He's had to do a little cleanup and position himself as a more liberal candidate now than he was when he ran for mayor of New York City.
If Mike Bloomberg goes forward in this race, he's going to find himself defending himself in ways that maybe he hasn't so far. Look, we talk about money. We're going to talk more about Bloomberg's money, where he spent it around the country while you weren't looking, not on campaign ads, but he's been doing this for years, and he's been earning the support of a lot of people around the country who you might not expect. We're also going to talk about his unorthodox campaign strategy, speaking with Reed Wilson. Up next, a key mayor in South Carolina who's supporting Mike Bloomberg. Stay close. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's our monthly politics check-in with Reed Wilson of The Hill. And today, we're talking about Mike Bloomberg, former New York mayor, billionaire, big spender, Democratic congressional presidential candidate. And we asked you what you thought of the billionaire former mayor. Here's what two of you left in our inbox, starting with John from Colorado.
I would describe it as being somewhat pathetic, and I am more than a little put off by it. Michael Bloomberg is just coming into this late. He doesn't have any grassroots support. He's fronting an immense amount of his own money. And it's just a clear attempt to buy the nomination when you have these candidates that have had popularity for years and years, like Bernie Sanders. I don't think the Democratic voting base is that stupid. And I think people feel the same way that I do.
My name's Joe. I'm from Atlanta. I'm happy he's in play, especially as Joe Biden loses traction for a number of us for a variety of reasons. Bloomberg offers an alternative. That he's using his own money doesn't bother me a bit. As a matter of fact, it seems like he's putting his money where his mouth is. That he has access to such funds is another matter that we can only address through comprehensive campaign reform.
T tweeted this: if Bloomberg wants to spend all his money on his campaign, then I'm not mad at him, but it's not going to get my vote. I'm voting on policy, and he's not my closest match in policy. I would only back him if he wins the nomination. Reed, all of this money that Mike Bloomberg is spending, and we see him go from basically zero to rising, at least in the polls. Is Mike Bloomberg buying what's called name ID? Is he buying name recognition? Is there any way to know if he's buying actual support when somebody goes to the voting booth and casts a vote? Because those two things can be different.
So we'll get at least a little hint of that on Tuesday when New Hampshire goes to the polls. Mike Bloomberg has not made a priority of campaigning in the first in the nation primary state, but he is on television and he is on the ballot. Unlike in Iowa, where he was sure an option, but there was zero presence and the Iowa caucuses require the organization necessary to win over delegates there. I would suggest that he is, in fact, building some support, and I would point to the number of people who've actually backed him so far. It's a pretty wide roster. Today, Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo said that she'd back Bloomberg for president. She's sort of a centrist Democrat, former head of the Democratic Governors Association, so she's tapped into the sort of the party's donor base there. Muriel Bowser, the mayor of Washington, D.C., and mayors across the country. Of course, Bloomberg, a former mayor, has been a big funder of gun control efforts through his Every Town for Gun Safety.
And we're going to talk a lot more about mayors around the country who've backed him. We got this tweet from Katie who said, "I'd love to see the clash of the New York Titans," or as Bloomberg says, "Who's the other billionaire in the race?" I did refer before to Donald Trump as a billionaire. That is a matter of some debate. According to Forbes, Donald Trump is not quite a billionaire. Michael Bloomberg most definitely is. Net worth 50 to 60.
I thought it was 60 last
60
time
billion. One of the richest people in the world. Reid, talk about this campaign strategy, though. You said we'll get some data points in New Hampshire where Mike Bloomberg has made no effort to promote himself, neither in Nevada nor South Carolina. We talk about Iowa, but Bloomberg wasn't even playing in Iowa, although his campaign ads are on television there like they are everywhere else. He is trying to jump in on Super Tuesday, first week of March, when how many states?
13
states. You got Minnesota, 13 states across the country all do their Democratic primaries on the same day. Michael Bloomberg's not the first person in history to try a Super Tuesday only strategy. What's his play here?
He is the only person to try it while being able to advertise successfully in all of these states. I mean, Super Tuesday, the states that are up range from, you mentioned Minnesota, but there's also, you know, Massachusetts and Vermont. Okay, so Warren and Sanders will have good days there. California is the big prize. Texas goes on Super Tuesday, and several southern states, I think Mississippi, Alabama, places like that, where, you know, these candidates have not been or have not been on television, have not been advertising themselves. And the average Democratic primary voter is only seeing Michael Bloomberg on television. He or she may be watching the news and reading the newspaper and seeing that Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders did well in Iowa. But does that substitute for literally, you know, 20 or 30 advertisements that somebody sees in a given week? I mean, Michael Bloomberg is advertising at a rate that's called 2,400 gross ratings points, which means that the average person watching TV will see one of his campaign ads 24 times in a week. None of the other candidates are even up in a lot of these states. I think Bernie Sanders just started buying advertising in some of the Super Tuesday states. But his goal is to overwhelm the system and to be the only person at top of mind in any of these early states, collect a bunch of delegates, and then use that momentum both to kill off his rivals for what I think we could fairly call the moderate lane of the Democratic Party, and then go one-on-one with somebody like Bernie Sanders. And as we saw in the 2016 presidential primary, you know, Hillary Clinton beat Bernie Sanders by a substantial margin. It was a relatively close race, but if you put moderates and somewhat liberal people in a coalition against actual, like, very liberal people, those moderates and somewhat liberals are going to win.
A lot of people feel like Mike Bloomberg doesn't have a lane unless some campaign misfortune befalls Joe Biden, unless Biden falters, terrible gaffe, some revelation or something, like, unless the Biden campaign implodes. Do you agree with that Biden is in Bloomberg's way, or does Bloomberg have a way of targeting Biden, going after him and eroding his support? Because you look at Joe Biden, strong support among African Americans, strong support among a lot of these Democratic constituencies, leading in the polls consistently in American politics for 40 years, you wouldn't think he's super vulnerable, but is he?
I think he is, and I think the vulnerability started in Iowa. I went to the last couple of events that he did. The energy level was much lower than it was for some of the other candidates out there. It felt almost like a campaign that was nearing its last legs. And let me tell you, there are two things in the way of Joe Biden right now. First of all, in South Carolina, you mentioned that he's got good support among African-American voters. There is another candidate, by the way, another billionaire, who is eating into that support. The last survey we saw from the Charleston Post and Courier showed that Tom Steyer, the billionaire activist from California, is starting to eat into Biden's base among African-American voters. Now, African-Americans make up a majority of the Democratic electorate in the South Carolina primary, but Tom Steyer is cleaving off his share of those voters. So that tells me that somebody else has an opportunity to slow Biden's momentum there. What if he comes limping out of Iowa, limping out of New Hampshire? Nevada comes next. We haven't seen a lot of good surveys there. Nevada is sort of a unique thing. It's a younger political culture that hasn't embraced presidential politics as well as Iowa, New Hampshire, or South Carolina. It's getting there. But what if Biden comes out of these first four races without a win or with one very underwhelming win? And then we hit Super Tuesday, and Super Tuesday becomes all about Mike Bloomberg. So I think Steyer is in the way of Biden scoring a convincing win in South Carolina, and then Bloomberg gets in the way of him scoring any kind of convincing win on Super Tuesday.
It's just fascinating. Other candidates have tried a Super Tuesday strategy. It's never worked. Nobody has done it with this amount of money and this amount of visibility. This is, you think there's nothing new under the sun. I have to say, this is new. This Bloomberg phenomenon on Super Tuesday is going to be new. And that's interesting. Well, we talk about Bloomberg's money. We also have to talk about the connections he's made and the money he spent long before this presidential race even started. One of the early states that Bloomberg is skipping is South Carolina, which we mentioned. But he did pick up a big endorsement from the mayor of Columbia, South Carolina, anyway, even though Bloomberg isn't in South Carolina. And I spoke to Mayor Steve Benjamin earlier today. Benjamin, by the way, is also co-chair of Bloomberg's national campaign. And I asked him why he thought Mike Bloomberg is the best person to be president.
Well, Mike's got an incredible record, not only, of course, as a business person, building a business after being fired from his job in 1981, to a business that now has offices in 120 countries, 20,000 employees. He's run probably the most complex and consequential city in the world, the center of a $2 trillion gross metropolitan product, 500,000 jobs created as the mayor of New York City, helped revitalize New York post 9/11, and certainly his work as a philanthropist, taking on not just the important issues, but the tough issues, reducing gun violence, fighting climate change, taking on the tobacco industry, fighting not only smoking, but vaping. We've had incredible business people, amazing philanthropists, and incredible public sector leaders who've run for president in the past. We've never had someone who's distinguished themselves in all three areas. I think Mike is unique. He's the type of executive we need in the White House in this day and time. He's the right person to take on Donald Trump.
You know, the Democratic electorate right now doesn't seem like it's in a place to think kindly about a multi-billionaire, certainly when you look at the politics of some of the other candidates. And why should Democrats consider a former Republican mayor and one with a track record? You mentioned part of his track record, but other parts of his track record, a lot of Democrats wouldn't support, especially on issues like policing.
Yeah, well, I'd say, first of all, all due deference to the Democratic field. The American people, however, feel strongly about capitalism, feel very strongly about folks who worked their way up the ladder. Mike's dad made no more than $5,000 to his career. I think nowadays that'd be about $50,000. He's built a business, and I think people respect that and want to emulate that. We believe in the American dream. And I wouldn't say I've been a public sector leader, a mayor for 10 years. No one has a perfect record. But I think taking in the totality of the contributions that this man has made in the public sector alone, I think people see some amazing successes there and want to see that type of success emulated on the national scale.
Now, how has your endorsement played with voters in your city? South Carolina is fourth in the string of states that go in the primaries, but Mike Bloomberg isn't even playing in South Carolina, not even competing. So what did people in your city think when you said this is the guy who should be president?
Well, if you go back and look at the record, I think I actually endorsed Mike before he formally got into the race. I may have been his very first endorsement. And I knew that, of course, the first two primaries and caucuses were not a part of the schedule. Most of the other campaigns have been on the ground here for at least a year. So playing catch up would have been a rather significant task. So the Super Tuesday strategy, March 3rd on, is where the vast majority, 95% or so, of the delegates will be selected. It's been a smart strategy, and I honestly think it's proving itself out. We have now by Super Tuesday, we have 2,000 people on the ground in states where we have more staff on the ground than all other campaigns combined. We're going places where no other candidates going. We've used our time very effectively, and my citizens, some of who who questioned, you know, exactly what we were doing early on, I think now are starting to see the prudence of this decision. We need someone who's got a good, strong track record getting things done, someone who's not afraid of Donald Trump, someone who would not only dedicate his time and his talents, but also his treasures to helping restore this republic to where we know it can and should be. So I think right now, I will tell you, my phone rings every single day. You have folks who are just downright excited about the trajectory of this campaign and what it could potentially mean for the Democratic field.
Now, Mayor Benjamin, you're not alone. Mayors in other cities have also endorsed Bloomberg, former Mayor of Flint, Michigan, Mayor of Washington, D.C., and many others. Many of them have been through what's called the Bloomberg Harvard City Leadership Initiative, where mayors go learn about running cities, sort of a symposium there at Harvard. You were part of that as well. How important was that experience to you in forming your endorsement of Mayor Bloomberg?
It's shown a real investment in making sure that people understand that the American economy, literally 85% of our citizens now live in cities and metro economies. 92% of America's GDP is created in those cities and metro economies. So having good, solid leadership that relies on data to get things done is something that's made a difference in American cities. And I think a number of mayors value the fact that the mic understands that things really get done on the ground. They're not getting done in Washington, D.C. We're talking about folks, men and women, and even I think you'll see some Republican mayors down the road who just know that Mike's about getting things done, and you'll start seeing a growing number of supporters.
Now, you mentioned the Bloomberg philanthropy. Many of the cities where mayors have come out to support Mike Bloomberg have gotten grants, in some cases millions of dollars in grants for programs in their city from the Bloomberg philanthropy. Has Columbia, South Carolina gotten any of those grants?
Yeah, we've got a modest grant, probably a few thousand dollars or several thousand dollars. Nothing significant, but there's no connection there.
And what about political contributions to you specifically? Have your campaign efforts gotten any money from Mike Bloomberg?
No, and never. Never gotten a dime. And actually, when I decided to endorse Mike, I also made the decision our city would not apply for any grants from Bloomberg Philanthropies. And it's also important to note, too, of course, Pete Buttigieg participated in the Harvard Bloomberg program. A number of mayors who've also participated have endorsed other campaigns, too. So there's no connection there. And I think anyone who tries to connect some dots there is on a fool's folly.
Mayor Steve Benjamin is co-chair of Mike Bloomberg's national campaign. He's also the mayor of Columbia, South Carolina. Mr. Mayor, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Well, Reed Wilson, one feature of Mike Bloomberg's campaign has been a string of endorsements from mayors all across the country, including Steve Benjamin there. And I got to say, a lot of these mayors, without really a lot of obvious ideological or political connections to Mike Bloomberg. Where does this come from? Why is Bloomberg collecting all of these endorsements from mayors really from every corner of the country?
Yeah, I think he pays more attention to urban issues than others. I mean, we're going through there's a fascinating little corner of the policy world right now that's debating what the future of the American city looks like, how transportation flows, how a city's relationship with the state government, things like that. And Bloomberg has been on the forefront of that. He's been cultivating a sort of a group of mayors who see the future of the American city like he does. And you know, I got to say, when you talk about mayors in local politics, mayors tend to have better organizations, ground games, if you will, than people like governors or senators or folks like that, because they've got to organize in their one little particular community, or little or big, and as the case may be. And a lot of these mayors, I mean, their endorsements are more valuable than a member of Congress might
be. I wanted to ask you that. I mean, you think that these endorsements could have an impact?
I think they could. In a place like California, with the Stockton mayor, Michael Tubbs, he was the youngest mayor in America when he was elected. He's one of the first millennial mayors, as he will remind you if you ever talk to him. But the Tubbs, a young African-American man in a very diverse city in California that probably doesn't know who Mike Bloomberg is, because why would you pay attention to who the mayor of New York City is if you live on the West Coast? But here is this, you know, young, dynamic mayor who's endorsed a candidate, and that opens up doors that, you know, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders might not have opened to them.
People here in Washington, D.C., many of them shocked and surprised when Mayor Muriel Bowser endorsed Mike Bloomberg. And really, if you came to it as a neophyte, you'd think they have almost nothing in common.
Yeah. And I mean, consider the members of Congress who have backed Bloomberg. You mentioned the sort of lack of ideological cohesion among the mayors. The House members who have endorsed him range from Bobby Rush on the south side of Chicago, very liberal member of the Congressional Black Caucus, to Stephanie Murphy, who heads the New Dems. So there's a pretty wide ideological difference there. And clearly they see something in Bloomberg. I would suggest that it's the notion that he can beat President Trump.
We're going to spend a little bit more time on the candidacy and the money of former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And then we're going to look at a Senate seat in Colorado where a seat is up for grabs, a vulnerable Republican senator up for re-election, and he's got a fight on his hands, an uphill battle, whatever metaphor you like. Cory Gardner is in a race. Can Democrats flip this red seat blue? We'll ask Reed Wilson, and we'll hear more from you, too, in just a moment. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A. Reed, we got this tweet from Too Much, who tweeted, "The DNC changed the rules and let Mike Bloomberg buy a spot in the debate, but booted out all people of color because they didn't have enough money." And that gets me to an important question. Mike Bloomberg did not qualify for the Democratic debates up until now. Now it appears he will qualify. Why the difference? What happened?
Well, he hasn't yet, and I think that's an important thing to say. The Democratic National Committee has dropped a donor threshold. Basically, campaigns had to raise money from X number of individual donors and reach a certain threshold in polls to qualify for the debate stage. They have dropped that. And by the way, the DNC comes in for a lot of criticism, but I will say they've been saying since pretty much November, October, that they would eventually drop this donor threshold so that other candidates could get in if they had either received a delegate to the national convention or qualified for the polls through debates.
So Bloomberg wouldn't have qualified earlier because he doesn't have a wide swath of donors. He has one himself.
He does not accept donations from anybody, which is a big part of his pitch, that he can't be bought, yada, yada, yada. The qualifications now, a candidate either has to receive a delegate to the national convention. Now there will be delegates allocated whenever Iowa finishes counting. New Hampshire votes on Tuesday, and they'll count a lot faster because they have an actual like political professional or election professionals who know how to count ballots. I'm not being facetious. The Iowa Democratic Party does it on their own. New Hampshire has a professional staff of ballot counters to run a primary. So if Bloomberg does not come out of either of those states with a delegate, which it appears he will not, he would have to receive 10% or more in four different polls, qualifying polls, basically the legitimate pollsters who are out there, in either an early state like Nevada or South Carolina or in national polls, or he has to receive more than 12% in two state polls, so Nevada or South Carolina. He doesn't have any of those yet. He has zero polls that show him qualifying, so it's not clear to me that he will not make the debate stage. I think it's this Friday in New Hampshire. The next possible debate comes up in a week and a half or so in Nevada. That is the one that he could qualify for, but he has not yet.
Shiloh wrote on Facebook, "I am completely and utterly frustrated with the DNC and the media for pushing their establishment candidates." Then again, Reed, if Mike Bloomberg doesn't qualify for debates, there's that other question, the big unknown. Does it matter when you have this much money?
And I would think that from somebody like Bernie Sanders' perspective, I would almost want Mike Bloomberg on the debate stage, because that's the one chance that Bernie Sanders would have to confront Bloomberg, to take him on in a venue that is not, Mike Bloomberg's campaign advertisement. So sure, he's spending all this money, but Bernie Sanders gets a free airtime on the debate stage to go after the billionaire. You know, on Bernie Sanders's signs, it says paid for by Bernie for the people or whatever it says, and then in parentheses, not the billionaires. Well, he can take on a billionaire one-on-one. That seems like an opportunity that Sanders or Warren or Buttigieg or anybody else would relish.
Well, Mike Bloomberg was at a campaign event last night in Philadelphia, and he mentioned something apart from anxiety of Democrats picking somebody who can beat Trump that is on the minds of a lot of Democrats, fracturing the party.
Let me be clear. My fellow Democrats in this race are all good people. If one of them wins the nomination, I will support him or her because this election is just too important for our party. This election is too important for our party to have the kind of divisions that we saw back in 2016.
More than that, Reid, Bloomberg says even if he doesn't win, that the money from his empire keeps flowing to whoever does. Is that important?
It's hugely important. A lot of the staffers who have signed up for his campaign have signed contracts through November of 2020. Now, if he's not in the race, they're still getting paid. Presumably, he's going to ask them to do some work on behalf of the Democratic nominee. Bloomberg has already said that he will fund House and Senate campaign efforts for the Democratic Party. This is a potential opportunity to blow open a fundraising gap that has never existed in American politics. If one candidate puts, you know, $1 billion into a race, all of a sudden, I mean, this whole landscape changes.
We got this note from Liz, and actually several notes like this. If Bloomberg can beat Trump and he wins the nomination, I will definitely vote for him. The Bernie backers will not vote if Bernie loses, and that's a huge problem.
I didn't pick that up when I was in Iowa, and I talked to a lot of Sanders people, and there were a lot who said that they would be disappointed. But every single person I talked to said that they would vote for the Democratic nominee no matter what, with the exception of one woman I talked to who said that she would not vote for Tulsi Gabbard. And I don't think that Tulsi Gabbard has a great shot to the Democratic nomination. But the 50 or 60 people I talked to, every single one of them would lead off by saying, now, look, I'm going to vote for no matter who it was. But there is definitely that angst, the concern about a repeat of 2016 when there was a serious schism between Bernie Sanders and the Hillary Clinton back. We've seen Hillary Clinton herself bring that up in the last couple of weeks, talking about the fact that she didn't think that Sanders did enough for her. There were several Sanders supporters who were very conscious of those remarks, not terribly pleased that the former Secretary of State had weighed in once again, especially so close to Iowa. But they kept saying they'd vote for no matter who the nominee was.
Well, let's give the last word on Mike Bloomberg to Eric, who says Bloomberg was the only candidate my 15-year-old stepdaughter could name due to seeing so many ads on TV and YouTube. And Cowboy tweeted this: Bloomberg is literally everywhere. I even see him on Snapchat between stories. Billionaire Mike Bloomberg literally everywhere on Snapchat too. And if you have to check with your kids what Snapchat is, go ahead and do it, because you'll find Mike Bloomberg
Hipper than I am, I'll tell you that.
That's Reid Wilson, national correspondent with The Hill. Reid, always great to see you.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Remember, we are on Instagram. You can follow us at The 1A Show if you're on Instagram. This show was produced by Amanda Williams. This program comes to you from WAMU. It's part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for spending this hour with us. This is 1A.